Fix Radio's Essential Information Toolbox with Andy Stevens.
Good afternoon. I'm Andy Stevens and welcome to the Toolbox Show on Fix Radio. This is a show for all you trades, window fitters, sparks, plumbers, decorators, scaffolders, whatever your trade, welcome on board. Now, it's been an interesting week, hasn't it? We didn't, did we? East from the Beast, or East from the West, whatever it was, it never turned up, did it? It never showed. We didn't even have a flake of snow. Nobody went into work, and we had nothing. So that was another wet herring, a complete washout, to be perfectly honest. Work-wise, we have gone mad. We've taken on another two jobs, which is a little bit daft because it meant working over the whole of Easter until 8 o'clock on Monday. But it's better to be busy than sitting at home watching Jeremy Kyle. What else has happened? The roads. That was another subject for another week. The roads that we have to drive on. What a mess. You've got potholes the size of a Grand Canyon. We lost a couple of vans in one last week. Still haven't seen him. So these need to get sorted. Now, coming up in the show, the second half, as you probably all know by now, is Oi, Put the Kettle On. It's light-hearted, it looks at bodges, messiest trades, all the fun and games that we all have at work. Now, obviously, messiest trades, Jaquetta Brown from HMRC last week, she came in with carpet fitters, leaving those tiny little tacks everywhere that her cats and dogs ended up with in their paws. So they're certainly coming in. Tilers, decorators, although I think we all know sparks, they're still flying at the front. Now, if you've got any views or you want to get in touch, please text us here on 81400. Put the word fix at the beginning of the message. Or you can email studio at fixradio.co.uk. Now, are you thinking of buying a property soon? Are you even thinking of buying one to let out? Does the stamp duty rate of 0% on property up to 125 grand or up to 300 grand for first-time buyers actually help? What about London? Now, coming up on our show, we have a fantastic property expert who's going to go through all of these. She's got some top tips and a lot of really good experience and knowledge to help you through with buying that first property. Fix Radio. The property market and buying houses and flats, it is a minefield. So if you're thinking of buying your first property soon or even looking at buying a flat as an investment, where do you start? Does the 0% stamp duty threshold help you even if you're in London? Now, my guest this week is property expert Emily Evans, who has her own estate agency, as well as appearing on TV and in all the national press writing on property. Good morning, Emily.
Good morning. Well, good afternoon, actually.
Sorry, it's afternoon, isn't it? Yeah, it's afternoon here in London. We'll get straight into it. You were here with us about 6 months ago, weren't you?
I was indeed.
And one thing you said that you would like to see is this 0% threshold for first-time buyers.
Yeah.
Now, this has obviously happened since we last chatted.
Up to 300,000.
Up to 300,000. Do you think this is enough? And is it pushing the property market forward as much as you thought it would?
Absolutely, it's not enough, especially with young people buying in London. I mean, what's 300,000 realistically going to get you unless you move to kind of areas that maybe you might not want to necessarily live in? So it's really, yeah, it's not enough. It's not enough. And also, it's also interrupting the market for people moving as well. So the stamp duty needs to be abolished for also second-time buyers as well. So because the problem is, first-time buyers are struggling to buy, not only because of stamp duty, but because the houses that first-time buyers could afford aren't even necessarily coming on the market, because the people that would normally sell their property to first-time buyers can't afford to move either because of the stamp duty land tax.
So, as you just rightly said, what does 300 grand get you?
Yes.
The average house price in London, according to Rightmove, is 620,000, and the average house price in the southeast is 394,000. So how on earth is the average person going to get on the property ladder?
Absolutely, and especially if you're single as well, because of a mortgage, you can borrow between, well, depending on your situation, if you're self-employed, that's a whole other matter, but 4 to 5 times your income. So if you're an average earner on, let's say, 25,000 a year, you know, what's that going to, you're not going to be able to get a mortgage and a deposit together to even buy a property. It's craziness. It's crazy.
So living in London, young professional, single or married, where would you recommend looking? Because obviously you're going to need to get on the property ladder, which would probably mean looking outside of London. And then would you say to rent it out, make the profit, and then look at buying in London?
Yeah, so basically, if you can't afford to buy in London at the moment, I would recommend, yeah, buying something out of London. So at least then you've got your money invested in bricks and mortar. Your prices are going to be rising, and at least, you know, tenant, you rent it out and tenants are paying off your mortgage ultimately. So I would say invest in something else. I know it's a risk and people don't necessarily like to do that, but it really is worthwhile. Then when you can afford to and you've got more equity within that property, sell that, and hopefully you'll be able to buy in London. Obviously you've got areas in London that you probably would be able to afford in. Croydon's a very up and coming area. You can pick up a 3-bed house there for about £250,000. But again, it all depends on, you know, where you want to be ultimately, where you need to be for work. So, yeah.
So later on in the show, we're going to look at these areas outside of London, and we're going to give everyone the opportunity to go and research it, have a look at certain areas that have either having a lot of money put in or going to be on certain new rail routes such as Crossrail.
Yeah.
Now, I've got to ask your opinion on this. I went and saw a repeat customer, done work for them before a few weeks ago, and they had a full survey when buying this house. They've been in there about 6 to 8 months. They asked me to go in and price up a refurb. As soon as I got in the door, we went into the staff quarters, and there was a very evident stain of a leak. So I pointed it out. Oh, we hadn't seen that before. Obviously, they've not been looking for it. So what's happened is we've done some more, if you like, research, and it made a few test holes. It's a bad leak. We're talking 2 bathrooms, downstairs rooms, got to be all stripped out and redone. Where do they stand in relation to going back to the surveying company that basically haven't mentioned this and passed it as absolutely sound?
A couple of things. First of all, it depends on how long the leak's been there for. If there's any way the surveyor can prove that it wasn't there when he was there, then obviously you've got no leg to stand on. Ultimately, surveyors' reports as well, they are very good at covering their backs. So it will say this has been checked, but we still recommend you to get a building professional in to take a look. If there's nothing that covers them like that, that covers a surveyor like that, then absolutely you can go back to them and hopefully get some money for it. But they are very, very good with their documentation and what they get you to sign.
I think it's a good point, but looking at this, once the tiles came up, the ply came up, the actual floor joists underneath the tiles, the adhesive and the ply, had started to rot to the point it was mush. So to me, that's been there years.
Yeah, the problem is a surveyor ultimately can't see what's not in front of them. They're not going to start destroying things to find that out. So they will say in the small print, you know, further investigation is needed. So they're very good at covering their backs. That's the problem. But I would just suggest to your client to look into it, read their surveying report, and then there might be a way that they can get some money back for it. But it's, yeah, they have to have a proper read of their documentation.
And if not, insurance company.
Yes.
Now, we've got a quick, I think we've just got enough time for one more question before the break. We touched on this last time, but I'd like to go over it again. When applying for a mortgage, and as you say, obviously very different if you're self-employed or PAYE, mm-hmm. banks or brokers, and why?
Absolutely brokers, because they compare, and a whole of market broker as well, so they're not specifically tied to one lender. So many people I know make the mistake of going, thinking, let's go to my bank and I'll see if I can get a mortgage. And ultimately, they might not be able to get a mortgage with their bank. It won't be the best mortgage deal out there. So a broker, because it's like, you know, compare the market, compare the maker. It's comparing for a whole range of mortgages, so definitely a broker.
Now stay tuned, because after the break we're going to be giving you some top tips on mortgages, areas to invest in, as well as finding out who Emily thinks is the messiest trade. This is Andy Stevens and this is The Toolbox, and on today's show we're talking with our property expert Emily Evans. Now, mortgages, we were just talking about before that, Emily, you have made it very clear you're very pro brokers. Mm-hmm. Now, I've heard a story, and I'd love to hear your thoughts on this, because it's not the first time I've heard it, that you can go into a high street bank, apply for your mortgage, either not get offered it or get offered one at quite a high interest rate, go to a broker down the road, get offered the same lender at a lot better rate. Is that going on? And if so, how can that be?
Yeah, so brokers have special deals, are given special deals by the lenders. So, yeah, this goes on. And that's why, again, I always say to people, go to a mortgage broker. And yes, they're going to charge you initial upfront fee anywhere between like £300 and maybe up to £1,000. But ultimately, they might save you that money and a lot more money further along down the line throughout the term of the mortgage.
Well, surely if there's a 1.5-2% difference on the on the loan of X, it's going to save a fortune.
Absolutely.
So always brokers when applying
always
for mortgages.
Always brokers, yes.
Now, we touched upon earlier, London, as we know, is astronomical in terms of property prices. We said we're going to look at areas which you feel are going to be good to invest in. Now, Crossrail isn't that far off. There's quite a few towns that are further out which are going to be on that route, and there's other areas. Elephant Castle I know has gone up a lot recently, but that's still having billions pumped into it. What areas and why should people be looking at to invest outside London?
So you're absolutely right, the Crossrail, but then ultimately, because when the Crossrail came out, it was announced, the area then suddenly already boomed, but still you can pick up some good deals there. I'm being told that Croydon's a pretty good place to invest, Crystal Palace, but then even out of London, cities like Bristol, because it's going to be a lot quicker to get from Bristol to London. I am investing in Bristol because it's a great area and it's really up and coming, and you can get a decent 2 or 3 bedroom house for about £250,000 compared to London, where you just can't get anything for that.
Well, I've got a friend of mine, he commutes from Swindon, which I just presumed was absolutely miles away, but it's a roughly an hour's commute. And I presume that if you're willing to sit on the train for an hour...
Well, we all sit on the train for an hour anyway in the mornings, don't we, on the tube?
It is, the magical hour to get into work. Yeah. So would you say areas that far out could be worth looking at? Or, again,
absolutely,
would it research it properly that something's being developed or there's infrastructure going on?
Absolutely. Look at the infrastructure. Look at what big shops and restaurants are going into towns or cities as well. I'm a bit biased here because I'm from Somerset, but in Bridgewater we have Hinkley Point, of which we've got thousands and thousands of workers coming to the area. We've got M&S coming to the town, a new cinema, Frankie and Benny's. I know people are probably thinking, oh my goodness, but that's big for Bridgewater. So really good investment place, and you can buy a 2-bed there for £140,000, rent it out between 6-6.25, you're looking at about 6-7% return on your money in somewhere like Bridgewater. So it's very good.
It's brilliant comparing with savings or even bonds and ISAs at the moment. If you can get 7-8%, it's a better return. Plus, you've obviously got the long-term capital growth.
Absolutely, and not spending a fortune on stamp duty land tax as well, because you can pick up investments at £140,000. So you're only paying stamp duty land tax on the difference between £20,000, rather than, and again, as a landlord, we unfortunately have to pay an extra 3% stamp duty than anybody else, which has really, really crippled the buy-to-let markets. You know, all these poor pensioners that, chop their pension in to buy a buy-to-let property have suddenly been scuppered by the government with regards to stamp duty land tax, with all these new rules and regulations coming in where we can't claim money back on the interest on a mortgage. So there's lots of things at the moment that's really stalled the property market.
Now, property programmes, you've obviously appeared in a few and produced some. I would like to ask, in my opinion, over the last sort of 10, 15 years, as they've become very popular in terms of viewers, these channels are making these property shows come across as though it's very easy to buy an old wreck of a house, do it up, sell it for profit, almost a given. But because of this, the demand for these derelict, rundown houses has increased. Is that not then eating into your profit margin? And if so, would you say now it's more of a risk than it was, say, 10 years ago?
Absolutely. You used to go to an auction and pick up really, really cheap properties, when now everyone knows that you get cheap properties. And actually, sometimes you can get properties a lot cheaper just on the open market. And remember with an auction as well, that if you find a property, try and get a sale agreed before it even goes to auction, because that might mean that you get it for the money you want rather than it going up too high.
How do you do that?
So basically, you just, when you've had a viewing, just say to the auction company that you've viewed it with, I'd like to make an offer for it to be taken off the market before the auction takes place.
And does that have the same sort of implication that once you put an offer in, like a live auction, you're committed to buy?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, you're still committed to buy. But then some people just think, well, actually, I've been offered this amount of money now, I might not get as much in auction, so that the vendor might take it. So that's definitely a good option to do that. But yeah, ultimately, you know, with regards to these property programs, we have seen properties, a lot of people investing in property because that's where, you know, you can make good money. But at the same time, properties that need work doing to them are probably going for, as you see in your business, they're probably going for more money than actually sometimes they're probably worth.
Now, moving on to something which is very close to your heart, estate agents, obviously owning your own estate agency.
Yes.
A lot of people are starting to look at online estate agents purely because of the cost. So if you've got a £1 million house and you've got an estate agent charging 2% to sell it, that's quite a lot of money. So you have the other option of going online. I appreciate you've got to do the own viewings. You've probably got to sort of manage the whole sales process, but you're talking a few hundred quid here.
Yes, but you have to pay that up front. So the difference between an online estate agent and a normal estate agent is you don't pay the normal estate agent anything until you exchange contracts. With an online estate agent, you have to pay all this money up front. And they say, a lot of these online estate agents say they've got a professional expert within your area. They have a for example, they'll have in Somerset a Somerset property expert. You can't be a property expert for Somerset. It's only per town. You know, you can only be an expert in your town. And so ultimately, you're probably not getting the correct valuation from that property expert. And all I say to people that are looking to put their house on the market and they want to go for the cheaper option, be a viewer first. So call up the estate agents and the online agent and pretend like you want to view a property and just see exactly what type of service you get from both. Because remember, with an estate agency on the high street, if they're working hard for you and doing a really good job, they're going to achieve probably more money for you anyway than the online estate agent is, because the online estate agent isn't being paid on a commission basis. And when a normal estate agent wants to get as much money for you, because the more money they get for you, the more money they earn.
But would you say it's the difference between paying, say, 800 quid up front or 20 grand?
Absolutely. I still like going into the bank. I still like speaking to somebody face to face. I think that you just can't do that with an estate agent.
So the online estate agents obviously offer a lot less. You've got to manage the whole process yourself as well. So
yes,
you've got to do viewings.
Options,
So stick with high street estate agents.
Yep.
Brokers rather than banks.
Yep.
And look at big areas such as Crossrail, infrastructure being developed. Big developments going on.
Absolutely.
Now, unfortunately, we're running out of time, Emily, but I think we've got the most important question coming up. Every guest that comes on, we have a competition which is ongoing, and that is the messiest trade. Now, there's all sorts, you can imagine, from plasterers to plumbers to sparks, groundworks. You've done a lot of properties up. I'm sure you've been in even more.
Mm-hmm.
In your opinion, who is the messiest trade?
Well, I've been very lucky, and I've got a great builder in Somerset. He's amazing. If he's listening now, Josh, I love you. But the worst trade, I would say, in my opinion, is a plasterer. They get it everywhere. And I've had it before where I've had a plasterer do the ceiling first, the walls first, then the ceilings, and I've had splash marks all down the walls, all over the floor. Terrible. What a mess. And dust everywhere.
If he's doing the walls first, he probably wasn't a proper spread. Emily, thank you ever so much.
Thank you very
Lovely
much for having
to see
me
you again. Now, if you've missed any of the Toolbox shows over the last few weeks or want to listen to them again, and there's some great advice as we've just heard on property, the previous weeks have included tax returns, employment law, etc., you can download the podcast from the iTunes store or the favourite place you usually get your podcast from. Now, coming up in a bit, we've got Oi, Put the Kettle On, which is the banter with your mates. I've got a rant this week, as I have every week, and the chosen subject is something which all us trades cannot stand, and that is mums on the school run. So don't go anywhere, because I'm not holding back, and They are really the bane of my life. We've also got the best wind-ups. We've got the messiest trades. I'd love to hear from you, so please get in touch. The best number on the text is 81400. Start the message with Fix or email studio@fixradio.co.uk. Fix Radio.
Let the rant begin.
Today's rant, yep, said it already, it's mums on the school run. Now, I happen to work in quite a posh area, Esher, Weybridge, Cobham, in Surrey, and with this, you get to experience all the mums on the school run. Now, where do I start? Most of these mums have these massive 4x4s, you know the ones, bigger than your average bus, and this is purely to do the school run and the trip to Waitrose Inn. However, they live only 50 yards from the damn school. But they couldn't have little Timothy Quentin Smythe Kensington Brown walking to school, could they? He might catch a cold, bless him, or damage his Italian bros that they've just had shipped in from Milan. What? Do you realise you and all the other mothers on school runs cause utter chaos on the roads? You're driving these tanks, blocking it up, carnage. And then, when you can't find a parking space within 10 yards of the school, yep, you double park. Mount the pavement, or just dump it wherever you fancy. This causes more chaos. We've got to get to work. We've got delivery drivers, trades, etc. We are being held up by you. And this is the carnage you're causing with your appalling driving. Now, we're furious. No wonder we jump on the horn, and then this is the funny bit, you look at us as though it's our fault. No, it's your fault, you divvy. You can't drive and are causing bedlam on the roads. Now, another thing they're very good at is blocking driveways because they feel they have a sense of entitlement. Oh, little Belvedere, we're slightly late because the maid didn't polish your Gucci shoes in time. Therefore, I'll park right across this person's drive. Doesn't matter how many people I inconvenience because we're super rich. Now, don't forget your Louis Vuitton school bag, darling. Now, because of this, we're taking an extra hour to get to work and we're only doing 6 miles, so this is stressing us out. So, tell little Johnny to get off his backside and walk to school. When I was young, I had to walk to a bus stop, 45 minutes on a bus, in all weathers. Trust me, it's not that hard. Quick clue, tell him to put one foot in front of the other and repeat. Repeat again, that's called walking. If you can't do it, get your maid, nanny, cook, cleaner, gardener to show Rupert if you're too busy ordering your click and collect from John Lewis. Right, we're getting wound up about this, so what can we do? Let's put a fine on them, 50 quid. Actually, let's do a sliding scale depending on how big the vehicle is. So that's going to be up to thousands a day. Doesn't matter, they'll pay it. Hang on, you cannot write this. I've just got a news coming on my phone, a news alert, saying parking on pavements could cost you 70 quid in a fine. Apparently it's been illegal to park on pavements in London since 1975. Do you hear that, mothers? It's illegal. Right, tell little Johnny to hurry up. Tell him to man up. He might even enjoy it. He might even get fit. We've had enough because it's too late and you're driving up behind you. And guess what? We're going to smash your back doors in.
Rant over.
Now, people have got in touch. We've got Robert from North London, who's just set up on his own and wants advice on which trade organisation to join. He said there's the FMB, Guild of Master Craftsmen, Chequer Trade. I think the important thing is you've got to look at which ones are proper federations. There's literally one popping up every day of the week. Make sure that you get vetted properly, you get inspected. So I'd certainly say the FMB, Guild of Master Craftsmen, they're sort of specialists for us builders. Patrick in Guildford says, when's the bacon butty van heading his way? Good question, mate. The best thing is text in, give the details of the job you're on, where you're working, number of trades, etc., and we will get it sorted for you. And finally, Darius simply says decorators are the best trade. Best at what, Darius? Skill set? Finishing ability on jobs? Or the best at leaving a fine dust everywhere, which lasts for months?
Fix Radio's Essential Information Toolbox with Andy Stevens.